This presentation has been previously broadcast.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Delivering the hope and peace of the season to you and yours. A look at Christmas you won't get anywhere else.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, great to be back here with you. Thank you for tuning in. You're going to love what we're about to talk about. I'll get you armed for that Christmas holiday. You'll sound smart. You'll sound informed. You'll sound like you know your history. You're going to love it. This is a great time of year. And part of it is because, you know, I love the decorations. I love the music. I love the lights. I hope you're enjoying the festivities, the sounds, the colors of Christmas. Did you know that many of these actually point us to the birth of Christ? I'll share with you, coming up with Ace Collins, the origins behind some of these great traditions. Like, why red and green? Why are they our Christmas colors? What about the Christmas tree? What's up with putting a big old tree in the middle of your house? Or how about mistletoe? Where'd that come from? Huh? You know, what about Christmas lights? What about all these different types of things? Even gift giving in general or stockings. What are the origins of this? And we'll talk about that. If you got a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you every holiday, whether it's a, you know, it's religious or secular. The holidays have their traditions. I mean, you can take a look at the 4th of July, right? But we've got, in fact, got fireworks on the 4th of July, right? You open bubbly. What's with opening champagne on New Year's, right? You cook a turkey on Thanksgiving Day and so on. But I don't think there is a holiday that we celebrate. There's none more than Christmas surrounded by these types of traditions. You've got carols, candy canes, you've got kissing under mistletoe, you got holly, you got St. Nicholas or Father Christmas or Santa Claus, you got angels, you got creches. I mean, the list goes on. You got fruitcake. You got a lot of different stuff happening, right? Christmas balls. And different kinds of foods get passed on to the next generation. Gift giving, a whole litany of traditions. I'm sure your family celebrates Christmas in a unique way. Everybody probably has their own little things that they do. So where did all this come from? And with all that's going on, how is it possible that that points us back to what the holiday is all about, the celebration is all about, the birth of Jesus Christ, our Lord and our Savior? Well, there's a man who did intensive research. He delved deep into this and has found the history and the traditions, and I think you're going to love this. You'll be able to share a lot of this with family and friends. Ace Collins joins me again today. This guy is a wonderful storyteller. He authored, I don't even know how many books now. You know, there's probably over 100. He wrote one called The Most Wonderful Time of Year, A Countdown to Christmas, amongst others. But you can check out his multiple books at acecollins.com. Hey, Ace, thanks for joining me. Good afternoon.
And I'm looking forward to delving into the great traditions, the stories behind the great traditions of Christmas. And this just happens to be the 15th anniversary of that book. And it's fascinating to me that you can actually go to China, where you don't think about celebrating Christmas, no, where you think about persecution and other things, and yet you can buy this book in China, written in Chinese.
Wow.
And so I'm amazed by the interest in traditions all across the globe. It's just, this book's been translated in all kinds of different languages. I talk about it on the Irish radio network and the Austrian radio network and the BBC and everywhere else. And it just seems no matter where you go, the fact is they celebrate Christmas. And because of the Christmas celebration being something that goes on everywhere, it offers us an opportunity, if we know the stories behind the traditions, to explain to these people a little bit what faith is all about and why this is a holiday and why we do embrace it and why we do celebrate it. And so, you know, those things open up a myriad of opportunities for us to share our faith if we just know how to do it.
No, how many books did you write, by the way? 60, 100?
I'm working right now. On a novel that will be 95, and then I'm doing a book that I was asked to do by my agent that Baker Books will have out next fall, and I'm about two-thirds of the way through it. All the research is done called Stories Behind the Songs About Heaven.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I have done a Stories Behind book in several years, and when they came to me and asked me if I'd be interested in doing that, I thought, you know, there's a great need for a book like that for people who are sitting beside people who are going through hospice care or people who have just lost loved ones, there's a lot of hope found in the stories behind songs that they've sung all their lives about heaven, and knowing where those songs came from and the people, more about the people who wrote them, I think will be something that will be quite inspirational.
Yeah,
for
let me know when that's out. Yes. Let me know when that's out. I'd love to talk
about
that.
It should be out next October. Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, give me a buzz. We'll talk about it, share it with
so
many people.
When you
here.
Count those two, when you count those two, you're counting mid-90s is what you're counting. Yeah.
Oh, so I always when I have an author that has written dozens of books, I always hate throwing out a number. I don't know where they're at, but it's great to have you. 95, 97 looks great. Let's talk holidays. See, one of the traditions that just about every American has, most people around the world do, is they put a tree in the middle of their home. And you're thinking, why would you have a tree in your home? Where did the tradition of a Christmas tree come from? You know, from a practical standpoint, cutting down a tree, bringing it indoors, having needles all over the place, the fire hazard, it just seems a little bit on the strange side. What's up with the Christmas tree, its origins, and why we have it indoors and didn't just leave it outside?
Well, I tell you what, initially the Catholic Church did leave it outside. They cut it evergreen every, in Eastern Europe, the Catholic Church has cut an evergreen every year and actually stood it up in front of the church. And it was known then as a creation tree. It represented the tree in the Garden of Eden. And they would do children's pageants and they would have children act out the Bible and they would tie a piece of fruit to the tree. And so the initial use of the church 1400 years ago, of a tree was to help teach the gospel in almost living picture book kind of things. Think of the living nativities that you see now. Well, go back 1500 years ago, and this is how you acted out the Bible for children. And remember, people back then couldn't read, they were illiterate, and to see something like this come to life was very important to them. At that same time, in the northern parts of Europe, particularly Scandinavia, people were marveling at evergreen trees, fir trees, because they didn't die in the wintertime when everything else died. And so this tree represented to many, many pagan cultures life and the mystery of life, because why didn't the evergreen die? And when the early missionaries got to these regions, Boniface being one of those who has been canonized by the Catholic Church, who went there, he explained that the evergreen tree represented faith that never died in the toughest times. He also pointed to the triangular shape of the fir tree as representing the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. And so he was probably the first to use it as a living track. And even though it wasn't associated with Christmas yet, it was then associated with Christ. And it moved beyond the creation tree into that realm. It was probably about 1500, maybe 1510, when the first Christians brought a tree inside, and they were Latvians, and they brought a Christmas tree into the house and hung it upside down from the ceiling. I'm not real sure why they hung it upside down, but I'm guessing homes were small, and it gave them more floor space if you hung it upside down from one of the beams, and they did have strong beams on homes back then. So that's when it was brought into the house. By mid-1500s, a tree was brought into the house every Christmas by people all over Eastern and Northern Europe. One of those who did that was Martin Luther. And Luther, at that time, was still with the Catholic Church and the Reformation had not started yet. And he wanted to explain. Now, remember, a lot of priests could be married back then and have families. And he wanted to explain to his children how dark the world was before Christ came, and how when Christ came, there was a light in the world. And he was walking through a group of evergreens one night and looked up and saw a moon and stars shining through those trees. He rushed back home, found a candle, tied it to a tree, and explained as he lit it that this is the light that came into the world when Christ was born. And thus we had the first light on a tree. They were decorating them before then with homemade decorations, little straw wreaths and other things. And remember, everybody knew how to weave back then. It was a skill. And so you could make things out of straw and other things and hang them on the tree. And yet, now I want you to think about here, and as reverent as we're being, let's also smile about this. We are hanging straw ornaments on a tree that has been cut down and is getting dry, and then tying candles to it. So, I mean, you know, this is a fire hazard waiting to happen is what it is. But each one of those things symbolized something that was essential to faith. Not wanting to lose anything, these people would still cut their trees in a perfect triangular shape. And when they took the branches off the trees, the branches they cut, they would weave those into round areas. The round circle that they'd weave it into represented the cycle of life, eternity, life never ending, with the green bows. And then they would put red ribbon on that to represent the blood of Christ. And then they would actually carve little figures, usually nativity scenes, and put those in that circular grouping, if you will, or display of the trimmed evergreen branches. And they would hang that on the door. And there came the original Christmas wreath. And so all of that came. And then we started putting lights on trees and decorations on trees. First ornaments were probably about 300-400 years ago in Germany. They were glass. As a matter of fact, Shiny Bright and those companies were the first American companies to actually create Christmas ornaments, and they didn't do that until the last century or so. So you're looking at those German ornaments that were exported all over the world, and the ornaments had different colors associated with them, the red being for the blood of Christ. The white ornaments are the white lights later, when we got electric lights, represented the purity of Christ. The gold represent the light that came into the world when Christ was born. The blue represented love. The purple represented royalty or majesty. The green represented everlasting life, much like the tree did. And those colors became so associated with Christmas that we forgot what they originally meant to the people who hung them, because each one of them looked at one of those colors and it displayed an element of their faith. So in a nutshell, and there's much more detail to it, by the way, it took the Latvians turned the tree over about 50 years and put it on the floor as well. So starting about 1550, all trees were headed toward the ceiling, not hung from the ceiling.
Yeah, my guess is Ace Collins. And just a point of clarity, I believe the Catholic Church had celibacy. Priests were not married at the time of
Luther. It may have been after the Reformation then, yeah.
So
yeah.
It was before then. I mean,
Luther's family may have come after the Reformation. I think you're probably right.
But as a side note, too, the colors that we have. I mean, you have the Christmas tree, which is green. You got Christmas lights. They adorn the trees. We got Christmas lights outside our home. We got Christmas lights everywhere now. Where did Christmas lights come from, and why is red and green the predominant color?
Yeah, the green representing eternal life, the red representing the blood that was shed for that eternal life. And so those are the two elements that bring forth that color, those two colors, and why they're so important to Christmas. And initially, the green was the most important because it was that promise of eternal life that people clung to. Because remember, life was short back then, 30, 40 years. Wow. You know, that was a long life, and life was difficult and hard, and people worked hard. And so, you know, faith became very important, and also the fact that there was a life beyond this one was something that they had to have, because the struggle of life was so strong. You wanted, you know, you were thinking of the reward that Christ was giving you when you died. And so the red and green were the two most important elements of Christmas for that reason. And so lights on trees, well, as I mentioned, the candle on trees, and people put candles on trees for about 300-400 years. First electric lights on trees only go back about 140 years. And it's when a man who worked for Thomas Edison decided his family didn't need candles on the tree because it was too dangerous. And he put together in the laboratory a series of colored lights that were 80 of them on the string, and put them on his tree and opened up the window so people could see it on the outside.
Wow.
And people actually, the newsmen came from as far as 1,500 miles away to talk about this magical tree with these lights on it. It didn't initially take off much. Grover Cleveland was the first president to have one because they were so expensive. It would be after World War II that they started producing trees, tree lights and tree strands that were cheap enough that normal people could buy them. And so if you go through my great-grandmother's things, you still see candle holders that were made to clip on trees. So it's only common people like us have only been putting up lights on trees for about 100 years or a little less. And when we did, if you were there in the 30s and 40s, if you put lights on trees, you would have two strands, and those two strands would equal 14 lights. And so there weren't very many lights on trees back then. More of the decorating was done with the glass balls, the tinsel, the icicles that they hung, popcorn, and things like that.
Boy, now you have 1,500 lights or more, 3,000 on some trees. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And artificial trees are dominating, I think, most households. I forget what the stat was, 86%, 95% of people who have trees now.
The first artificial trees, by the way, the first artificial trees appeared in New York City in the mid-1880s. And they were made out of feathers.
Really?
That's
fascinating.
They had such a demand. Yet remember, America did not really celebrate Christmas until about 1840.
Right.
And so 40 years afterwards, in the 1880s, they had such a demand for trees in New York City, they couldn't meet the demand. And so the people who were selling trees designed trees out of feathers to sell to people who couldn't find an evergreen tree. So those were the first artificial trees. The first tree lot, by the way, was in New York City. tree lots were such an important part of life in post-World War II America. I mean, Kiwanis Clubs, Optimist Club, churches, and all these different groups had tree lots where you could buy trees. Well, the first tree lot was in the mid-1880s. It was run by a man named Carr, C-A-R-R. So he was the first one that had a display of trees where people could go in and buy them. He'd go out there on a horse-drawn wagon, pull trees into the city of New York City on his wagon. They would buy them off the wagon. Eventually, he moved that to a vacant lot, and he had Carr's Tree Lot. And so I guess if you think about it from an auto standpoint, it was also the first car lot, even though the car hadn't been invented yet either. But so that's the first place to actually buy trees commercially in the United States.
Are Christmas traditions changing? I mean, we went from real trees and candles to, fake lights and to electric lights and to fake trees. Are trees going to be on a way out? Do you see certain things that have once been pretty predominant now becoming less in use? And how do you see our new traditions being formed too, I guess? This is summer, maybe in transition. Are we seeing new ones?
I don't know that we're actually seeing any new ones. You and I talk about songs a great deal, and there's only one or two songs that come around in a generation that are lasting Christmas songs. But I haven't seen many new traditions. There's a resurrection of old traditions that people are jumping on that haven't been celebrated in a long time, like a birthday cake for the baby Jesus. There are a lot more people doing that now than were probably doing it 25, 30 years ago. And that was an old German tradition from the 15, 16, 1700s. And so that is something that's coming back. But I think, if anything, the old traditions are expanding. People may not know why they're putting wreaths on doors, or they may not know what the tree stands for. But I'm going into more and more homes where there's more than one tree now. A tree used to be a luxury item. You had that one tree, and that was it. And now more and more homes have trees in almost every room. We have seven in our house.
I have three in mine, believe it or not.
I think rather than scaling back, people are actually doing a great deal more than they've ever done before. And I think that speaks to how badly we want to believe in Christmas. And by believing in Christmas, it's more than just believing it as the holiday of Christ's birth. I'm talking about people everywhere want to believe that Christmas can happen. There's a great Elvis Presley song that was written by Red West that you have probably heard a lot of times. It was Elvis's favorite Christmas song that he recorded, and that was, "Why Can't Every Day Be Like Christmas?" And I think there are more and more people now who are struggling with doubt and fears, and the technology of the world is changing so fast, and they're caught up with so many different things to do and so many different ways to go, that Christmas offers them a time, and all these decorations offer them a time to just sit back, take a deep breath, and think, man, why can't my life be like this all the time? Why can't I just sit here and look at a tree and concentrate on it? And it almost gives you a belief, I think, that, you know, if every day was like Christmas, we really could have peace on earth.
Yeah, it's so true.
We really could love our brothers and sisters. We really could open our arms and live out Matthew 25, 35 through 40, reaching out to the least of these, if just every day was like Christmas.
Yeah, my guest today is Ace Collins. If you want to join us, you got a question, a comment, feel free to dial in. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You know, speaking of the media.
Let's open it up and say if they want songs, stories behind songs, to call in about a story behind a Christmas song, too, as well as Christmas traditions,
sure.
Because we can talk about both.
No, phones, love to hear from you, so feel free to dial in. Speaking of the season, you know, the meaning of the season, it's Christ, the nativity crash. Everyone, you know, your Catholic church has that. Most churches have them. Christmas trees are most churches. A lot of people make sure they have a nativity set either in their front yard or in their home somewhere. What's the history behind the Christmas crash or the nativity set? And it also gets a lot of controversy, too, around the country this time of year, too. So, but your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Well, when you think about the oldest traditions of Christmas and what traditions originated within the church itself or within the faith, the two that jump out are gifts. You know, the first Christmas had gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and that opened the door for exchanging gifts and giving gifts. It opened up the door to how important giving is. And then that very next thing was when the Bible story was told to people, they would go home, and most people back then in the wintertime in Eastern Europe particularly had lots of time on their hands because they couldn't farm. They couldn't work outside because of the weather, and they were all craftsmen. I mentioned a while ago that they could all weave. Most people could also carve. And these people, during the wintertime, as they look forward to Christmas, would carve nativity scenes and set them up in their homes. So the very first Christmas decorations were nativity scenes. And they would take what they knew about the Bible and carve each one of the characters in it. And you know, the finest of the artists in the communities would also carve one for churches. And so if you walked into a Catholic church back then, you saw a nativity scene, and you saw it not just during the holidays. It was usually at the front of the church year-round, and it was usually carved by a local artisan. And so nativity scenes were the very first ways that the church taught the biblical story of Christ being born to their children. Now, it probably alarmed a lot of scholars at the time and priests that a lot of the nativity scenes had the wise men and the shepherd arriving at the same time, which we know did not happen. And if you look at the nativity scenes we have today, that still is something that they have. You know, it's almost like it's a misnomer. It's like the you know, in the 1800s, when a pastor of a church in New England decided that he was going to write a song that explained part of the nativity to his children, and he wrote "We Three Kings of Orient Are," and didn't really think about the fact that the Bible doesn't mention how many wise men came. Suddenly everybody now thinks there are three gifts, but it may have been brought by 10 people.
I'll tell you what, hang on one second. When we come back, we'll grab some calls. We'll take calls from around the country. Feel free to join the conversation.
Let's also finish up the nativity story, too.
That sounds great. All right, we'll do that when we come back. Feel free to join us, though. 888-914-9149. We're speaking to Ace Collins, an expert on the season, the traditions, the origins of so much of what we celebrate. We'll continue when we return.
Here's another Relevant Radio miracle moment.
I just wanted to give witness as a millennial a little bit and just give a plug in for Relevant Radio and why we love it so much. So my husband and I have been married for almost 9 years, and when we first got married, I was a very lukewarm Catholic, and over the years, I've just been realizing that I've been benefiting so much from his holiness, and he's just helped me return to the faith wholeheartedly, and it's just been really great. And we have 4 young children, and within the last year, we've made an active choice to have the sacraments just be the center of our family life. Relevant Radio, we've just become so reliant on it for not just learning more about our faith, but just to fall in love with it.
This miracle moment was brought to you by you.
We're only able to broadcast because of your generous support. Donate safely and quickly online at relevantradio.com or by using the Relevant Radio app.
Relevant Radio accepts donations of unwanted vehicles. The process is easy, free, and it helps keep Relevant Radio rolling. More information at 888-906-9069 or relevantradio.com.
Merry Christmas from Drew and the entire Relevant Radio family. Thanks for spending the season with us.
All right, great to be here with you today. Getting you plugged into the great traditions behind Christmas. You know, what are the colors, red and green, symbolize? We talked about the Christmas tree. What about caroling, nativity scenes, gift giving, stockings, advent wreaths, mistletoe? I mean, the list goes on. Yule logs. I do want to find out about the fruitcake, too. I don't know how that ever got started, but we could talk about that. Some of the fascinating stories. I'm here today with an expert on it. He's the author of a book called Stories Behind the Great Traditions of Christmas. He's written probably 97 different books, and you could check out many of these written on the music. And another one, The Most Wonderful Time of Year, A Countdown to Christmas. Just check out acecollins.com and you can get plugged in. I'll take your calls now, too. And you can join us, 888-914-9149. There's some great questions online. We were talking about the nativity, so let me jump to California here. There's Armita's listening. She's got a question about the nativity scene or the crash. Armita, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I have a question. I'm a catechist at my little church, Tourism Mission. We belong to one of the big parishes in Bakersfield, California. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we teach a lot about this topic to the kids and, of course, in Christmas. But the story that I heard behind the nativity set or the nativity scene is that St. Francis of Assisi going through from town to town in Italy, and preaching, and then one Christmas he put together a group of people, and then they reenact a scene of the nativity, and from then the tradition spread through Italy and, you know, through the whole world. So I just want to be sure if you guys heard that story before.
Oh, yeah. Before we went to break, we were about to talk about that. And as a matter of fact, the person who really put the large-scale creches on the map, Francis did with large wooden figures. I mean, life-size wooden carvings that he would erect every year. They moved from that to actually creating live nativity scenes that were much more elaborate than what we see today, because they had Stations of the Cross, and they would move, the nativity scenes would actually move across the entire community until they finally came to a set that was depicting the manger. And so you're exactly right in where we move from the nativity sets from just being little things in churches or in homes and being taken outdoors and placed on a scale that and sometimes was bigger than life with some of the creches that were created. And so there's a huge creche that's a wonderful creche in Pittsburgh that is to scale, that is just, it blows your mind when you see it. So you're exactly right on where that developed from little wooden carvings or little plaster of Paris carvings into this full scale thing that we see so many different places today that really bring the story to life.
Armita, thanks. That's a great, great call, because I was just in October, just about a month and a half ago, I was in a little town called Greccio, and that's the place where St. Francis created the first nativity scene there. And he had special devotion to the child Jesus and, of course, was credited at creating that first nativity scene back in 1223. And that's kind of the origins of it. He had one of his great followers was a St. Bonaventure. And he also talked about, as you heard Ace talking about, the live nativity scene as well. So there's a lot going on. I mean, it's a tradition that's been carried on around the world, and I guess it continues today. Here's an interesting call, too. Thank you, Armita. We'll go to Sean, who's listening in Atlanta, Georgia. Sean, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Where does the tradition of Santa Claus going up and down a chimney to deliver gifts come from?
That's a great question.
Okay, well, let's go back about 160 years to a pastor named Clement Clark Moore, that wrote a poem called A Visit from St. Nick. We know it as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. He was trying to bring some of that wonderful Eastern European culture to America, and Americans pretty much ignored Christmas at that time. As a matter of fact, the only two church groups that actually had Christmas Eve and Christmas Day services, unless it fell on Sunday during that time in the United States, were Lutherans and Catholics. The other mainline Protestant churches ignored it altogether, and America, as a matter of fact, continued until about mid-1840s. Businesses opened on Christmas Day, and Congress met on Christmas Day. And so Christmas was pretty much ignored. There's a colorful history in the book on why it was ignored everywhere in the United States and England, and why it was such a reverent, wonderful holiday in Eastern Europe. But to bring that holiday spirit and Father Christmas in some sections, St. Nicholas in others, Santa Claus in some areas to the American culture, and particularly his kids, this pastor wrote this poem, and it was published throughout the United States over the next 3 or 4 years, and it changed the emphasis of Christmas, which was kind of a Mardi Gras kind of celebration in the United States with a lot of drinking, a lot of revelry, into being a holiday that focused on children. And when that happened, all churches began to open their doors and had Christmas services, and also Congress made it a holiday and closed down on Christmas Day. So an old-fashioned Christmas in the United States really only goes back to about the mid-1840s, and it was because of the poem that opened up the Santa Claus legend, if you will, in the United States. And by the way, while we're talking about Santa Claus, I'll do this real quickly. Santa Claus's roots are two very important Christian people, St. Nicholas of Bara, who, that's where the red comes from, because this man, you know, wore red. His robe, you know, this priest's robes were red. He'd gone through the ranks of being a bishop and a cardinal, so he was wearing red robes, and he ministered to the poorest of the poor, the children, leaving often in these poor homes because doors didn't lock. He would go in the middle of the night, legend has it, drop coins into the home of very, very poor people, and they left the coins either in shoes or stockings by the fireplace. They only had one pair of stockings, so they washed them every day and hung them up in the fireplace. So that's in the 300s. And then you move ahead about 700 years to a Bohemian prince who delivered firewood, food, and clothing to the poorest of the poor in his kingdom each and every year. And we know him now as King Wenceslaus. And so there is the DNA of Santa Claus or Father Christmas or St. Nicholas, depending on what country you're from, what name he embraces. So Santa Claus very much has Christian roots.
I love it. Love it. My guest today is Collins. We'll take a few more of your calls. Thank you for that last call. We'll go to Bruce next. He's listening in Alexandria, Minnesota. Hi, Bruce. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. You know, there's a lot of Christmas songs that you just never get sick of, and I was wondering, is there a period of time when most of these kind of emerged and became popular? Like you said, in the past number of years, we haven't had a lot of new ones. Is there some kind of a period of time where we saw such a big growth in these, explosion or whatever?
Normally you get one or two a generation of the thousands that are written that hang on. I was asked the other question the other day, you know, what songs of the last 30 years are going to hang on and probably be sung 60, 70 years from now. Grown Up Christmas List is probably one of them. The other is Mary, Did You Know? And they're brilliantly written, that's why, and written from a different point of view, and probably why they hang on. You can go back to World War II, and there were three songs that were introduced in World War II that are probably three of the most favorite Christmas songs in the world, particularly in the United States. In 1941, Bing Crosby sang White Christmas for the very first time on December 25th on his radio show. It was actually, the record was introduced in 1942. In 1943, Crosby released a song that had 12 lines, I'll Be Home for Christmas. The other song that was released during that time was by Judy Garland from the movie Meet Me in St. Louis, and it was Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Those yeah. three songs released during World War II, when so many, when over eventually 12 million people were separated and fighting a war, and those people did not know if their loved ones were going to come home. Those three songs meant so much to that generation that I believe that is why they survived. Other stories on songs that survived, a lot of it's just luck. I mean, O Come, O Come Emmanuel was sung in the 800s and then disappeared by 1,000 and nobody was singing it. And then an English priest found it when he was translating a bunch of documents and found the original Latin, translated it into English about 200 years ago. And suddenly that is the oldest full song that we still sing. And so that survived because of that. We wouldn't know Silent Night if the organ didn't have to be fixed at the church in St. Nicholas where it was first performed, because it was the organist that took it around the globe, well, around Europe anyway, teaching it to every community that he went to. And so part of it is just luck, and part of it is timing of when you're going through tough times, you cling to things. And I think that is why those three songs I mentioned, it's why Little Drummer Boy, which failed for 20, 25 years to catch on, suddenly caught on during the Vietnam War, as did Do You Hear What I Hear? And so I think things like that represent something to each generation, and that's why we still cling to them.
Hey, Bruce, I'll tell you what. If you missed the broadcast, Ace was with me last week. If you go back to December, I think it was the 12th, it was my final hour three of the broadcast. Go to the Relevant Radio Archives, go to my podcast. You can listen to an hour of great Christmas music and insight on the stories behind some of the classics that we sing. So it's relevantradio.com or on your mobile app. Go to the Drew Mariani Show podcast, December 12th, hour 3, and you will love that hour. If you missed it, it's well worth listening. Was it 13th, Jake? You sure it's the 13th? I thought it was 12. All right, the 13th, Jake is saying. All right, it is 15 minutes now before the top of the hour. Let me take a short pause. When we come back, I want the answers to how fruitcake became a Christmas tradition. And if you don't know the origins of mistletoe and why we kiss under it, we'll bring you up to speed on that right after this.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, having that peace, that's going to be absolute confirmation that you have been following God's will, that you understood where God was calling you, you accepted that, you acted on it, and God will give you that peace.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, we kind of buy into things that we think are going to give us peace or joy or happiness. Paul talks about it in Colossians 2, 6 to 10. He's saying, no, be rooted in love, walk in him. See to it that no one captivates you with empty philosophy. So we could be what a friend had once called self-propelled Christians. So without God's love, it's almost like we're Fred Flintstone.
I guess it's kind of relaxing to know I'm at the wheel. Relaxing nothing. It's terrifying.
We're trying to push ourselves. God's like, you're being the protagonist. He says, let me do it. And when we do, you know, that peace is actually going to start to come up within us.
The Inner Life with Josh Raymond.
11 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Delivering the hope and peace of the season to you and yours. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out.
It is great to spend my afternoon with you. I say that every day because I really do love looking at life and spending afternoons with you, getting your insight, your questions, your comments, your contributions. I'm speaking today with Ace Collins. He wrote a couple books, 97 of them to be exact, but two you may want to check out. The stories behind the great tradition of Christmas and the stories behind the best love songs of Christmas. Jake is right. It was December 13th, hour 3, if you want to hear that conversation. It was a great conversation on the stories behind some of the best loved songs of Christmas. And as we wrap up our conversation with Ace today, I do want to ask you about two things. One, the fruitcake. Some people love it. Other people think, what the heck? It survives from year to year. It gets passed on. I was never a fruitcake fan, but then again, I was just a kid when I first tried it. I should probably try it again. But what's the history behind that?
By the way, I posted a Far Side cartoon on my Facebook page a couple of days ago that had the story of the fourth wise man, and it was he brought fruitcake and was rejected.
That's great.
That was, it was turned away. It goes back to probably about 300 years. In Germany, they were cooking annually, most families were, a birthday cake for the baby Jesus. And initially that cake was white, and they would put icing on the white cake, white icing on the cake, and one candle on the front. And the kids would sing whatever song they sang for a birthday song in Germany at that particular point and blow out the candle. And they would do that every December 25th as a way of remembering this was the birth of Christ. It developed from there because people saw commercial opportunities, but if they were making cakes back then, they had to last. And so they took some of the ideas for the birthday cake of baby Jesus, and those ideas had exploded in Germany, including various kinds of little pieces of candy and maybe even some coins in the cake for children to find as they ate it. And bakers decided, well, if we put enough preservatives in it, which meant alcohol, and dry the fruit and stuff, we can actually create a cake that you can, that we can make. It'll last until Christmas Day. People can buy it ahead of time and they can give it as gifts. And so that it expanded itself from that. Probably the most well-known bakery of fruitcakes in the United States now is in Corsicana, Texas. And they ship them all over the world. There's several others that ship them all over the world as well. Awesome. So that's pretty much it.
I'm going to give them a second shot.
My grandmother loved them, so yeah.
I'm going to give it a second chance. You're an adult now, and it sounds like mm-hmm. it would probably be a pretty good dessert. Who knows?
And let's also talk about the symbolism. The cake was sweet because it represented the sweet life that awaited someone who accepted Christ as your Savior. Yeah. And so there was some deep spiritual meaning initially behind it as well.
So one final question.
We want to talk about mistletoe.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. How did that come about, and why is kissing associated with it?
Okay. We'll go back 700,000 years to when the first Catholic missionaries actually arrived in Northern Europe. We had began the broadcast talking about how the Vikings and then also the Druids and the Celts looked upon the evergreen trees as almost being magical because they survived the harshest winters when the other trees lost all their leaves and went into, well, those people thought they died and spring back to life mm-hmm. in the spring is what they did. And in this particular case, the early missionaries saw that these people also were in awe of the mistletoe plant because it grew out of a dead piece of wood. And many of the tribes had a law that said if two warring tribes met underneath a mistletoe plant, they had to find a way to seek peace. And in the brilliance or inspiration, maybe it was God's inspiration to these early missionaries, they saw an opportunity to explain Jesus's life, death, and resurrection by using the mistletoe plant. Jesus was nailed to a dead piece of wood, and he did not die, and he came back to life. He grew, if you would, from that wood, just like the mistletoe plant did. The green in those leaves represented everlasting life. There were two different kinds of berries on those trees. There were both white and red berries on the mistletoe plants that grew in that section of the world. And the white represented the purity of Christ, the sinless nature of Christ. The red represented his blood. When these people became Christians, they would take mistletoe plants off of trees and hang them over the doors to emphasize to the world that they embraced Christ. They had found a new religion and a new hope and a new faith and something. And the symbolism of the mistletoe plant being a plant that could survive even the toughest, hardest times came to symbolize that their faith could also survive the greatest test.
I love it.
Well, they wanted their bride and groom to embrace that faith in their lives as well, and they wanted them to also be reminded of the importance of it, and so they would put a mistletoe plant over the altar, or if they were married outside, they would find a tree where a mistletoe was growing, and they would have the bride and groom exchange their vows under the tree, and then emphasize the fact that if they kept faith to Christ in their lives, if they kept their faith, they could survive the harshest, toughest times as well. What happens at the end of a marriage, even back then, is you kiss. And so we remember the kissing part now, but we fail to recognize how the early missionaries in that area used the mistletoe plant as a way to explain faith to people who could not read.
Wow, what a great story. Hey, Ace, I want to thank you for your great work.
You bet.
And it's always a delight talking to you, both about music and some of these great traditions, and there are many more. As I said when we began, that we could probably talk about, but I'm out of time. Your two books, or your 97 books, available acecollins.com. That's Ace, A-C-E, Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-S.com. And you might want to check out the stories behind the great traditions of Christmas and stories behind the best loved songs of Christmas as well. Thanks for making time for us, and just have a really merry and blessed Christmas. Thanks for joining me.
I tell you what, this good Baptist right here, You are my favorite interviewer that I do of the hundreds of interviews I do each and every year, and this is my favorite network. And I'm so grateful to the Catholics who have created over 90% of our Christmas traditions. Thank God that they embrace those and save those for all of us.
Well, I love it. Well, brother, thank you. And it's a delight to celebrate this season with you. Have a Merry Christmas. God bless you, Ace.
Merry Christmas to y'all.
All right. We'll catch up with Ace as his new book comes out, The Songs of, I think, of Heaven, he was saying a few moments ago, or so, Stories Behind the Songs of Heaven. I hope that's the title. But that's another one that's coming out. Keep a look. Check him out at acecollins.com, and you can get up to speed on all of his work. But it's great to have him on. I find this stuff fascinating. It really is the history. So hopefully you picked up something. You know, you got a story or two, a little bit of info that you can share at Christmas or when you're standing under the mistletoe. Now you know its true meaning. And maybe you'll try, I don't know, fruitcake this year as well. If anyone happens to have it, I might take a slice. We'll see. It's been a long time since I tried it. But hey, I want to thank you for your support here at Relevant Radio, too. We're a nonprofit. We've been reminding you that throughout the season, too. We had four pledge drives this year, and we rocked. I mean, you were so generous, and we're so grateful to be able to be here for you for months to come. Again, at the year end, if you're feeling generous, we're a 501c3. That means we're a nonprofit. Your tax deduction, you can take the tax deduction on your taxes, and of course, don't forget, you can do it a couple ways. You can call 877-291-0123 to give, or online at Relevant Radio, or download our mobile app. Lots of ways to give. And as I wrap up the broadcast today, I'm going to be back tomorrow. We'll take another look. We're going to look at the angels of Christmas, the role of St. Joseph. I'll tell you what it was like that first day. Plus, we'll take a big picture look at the economy. The stock market had another rough day. So I want to take a look at where we're heading in the coming year. That and a whole lot more. Hey, I'm out of time. Like I said, we'll be back again tomorrow. I love these next 2 days. There's a lot to share. We'll take a look at the Star of Bethlehem and so much more in the coming days ahead. Fascinating programming. I prayed for you today. Did an hour of adoration. So I want you to know that your intentions were remembered before the Lord and before Our Lady. I prayed my rosary for your intentions, and I'd ask prayers for me, for my family as well. I'm grateful for your prayers and for your friendship. I'll be back tomorrow. God bless.
Thank you for the time you take on this show to talk about matters like transgender in a world that's so crazy about this. It's so great to scan the dial on the radio and pick up a voice that's clear, truthful, and explains how we as Christians, non-Christians, who just don't agree with this philosophy out there in this world, how to deal with it. So thank you
thank
for
you.
That.
The Patrick Madrid Show, 8 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Relevant Radio can always be heard loud and clear
on your smart speaker.
Listen live, listen to your favorite show whenever it fits your schedule, access our exclusive In Conversation with God podcast, the Glenn Story Corner podcast, and more.